States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we have part one of a two-part series on preparing for the show season with Kathy Simard. But first, Jenny Johnson, who is the Executive Director of the Dressage Foundation, tells us about the work of the foundation and the grants that are available. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, you've been with the Dressage Foundation for quite a little while now, haven't you? You've seen it grow to the state where it is in now. I mean, it really has a strong history as well. Let's talk about that first, Jenny, how it all began.
Sure. The foundation was the brainchild of the one and only Lowell Boomer, who also was the founder of the United States Dressage Federation. Back in 1989, Lowell saw the need for a financial organization that can provide grants and scholarships and funding for dressage riders in order to continue to improve. And so he started the Dressage Foundation in 89. So we just celebrated our 25th anniversary last year. It's really exciting to see how it's grown, even in the time that I've been here. I believe this is my sixth year here at the foundation, and you know, what started out with just, you know, kind of a handful of grants has grown to over 20 funds that offer numerous grants every year.
Yes, that's amazing, the number of grants that you have. It's not just one or two. It is quite a repertoire that you've got there, and amazing what diversity of offerings you have. So we're going to talk about all of those grants, but give us a sense of who's on the board first, Jenny, and you know, who has represented the organization for a number of years, because you've got a very talented and experienced group, haven't you?
We do. We are so fortunate to have the people on our board of directors that we have. Many of them have been with the foundation for a long time, such as Marielle Barnett, who is our current chairman, Judith Noon, who is our treasurer, Michael Poulin. We've got other Olympic representatives such as Lyndon Gray and Hilda Gurney, Carol Lavelle. We've got a very diverse board that supports us in many different ways and with their time and abilities and talents. And so from East Coast to West, we've got representatives across the country who help us and lead us in the direction that we are headed.
Yes, a terrific board, but also a small staff that is actually managing the organization on a day-to-day basis.
That's right. I am the full-time employee, and then Jane Fusionero is our part-time employee. So it's two of us here in the office, so we have a wonderful volunteer base, not only just our board of directors, but others who help us spread the word across the country, because we're in Lincoln, Nebraska, and we can't be everywhere. So we rely heavily on our volunteers, including our state representatives, who we try to have one person or two people in every state that get our information out to the local GMOs and clubs, and as well as the local shows.
Well, as you mentioned, you've got a terrific selection of grants available to the world of dressage in the U.S. It's starting with the young riders. Let's talk about each of them, Jenny, if you could give us the overview of what each of them offers.
The only reason we have any of our grants is because of very generous donors. We don't have membership dues, so everything that I'm going to talk about is only because of people who have seen the need to support, whether it's young riders or instructors or breeders. And so I just have to give a very big thank you to everyone who's ever supported the foundation with a donation, large or small. They're all important. The grants that we have do range from young riders, beginning riders, all the way up to the high performance Olympic levels, which is really exciting. It's across the board, across the country. Young riders, we have grants available for them to attend some of USDF's events, such as the Junior Young Rider Clinic Series or the Young Rider Graduate Program. We have young rider grants if they want to, you know, attend an educational event that maybe they wouldn't otherwise be able to attend. We also have the Young Rider International Dream Program, where we send four top young riders over to Europe for 10 days for an introduction into world-class dressage. So that's a really exciting program that we offer as well. Adult amateurs, we do not forget about adult amateurs, of course. They are the backbone of our sport in the United States, and there's so many of them. So we're really honored to be able to provide grants for adult amateurs to take a week out of their daily lives and go train with their horse, get some one-on-one time with their trainer or a trainer of their choice, get away from home and the pressures of work and children and just normal life, day-to-day life. So we offer those gifted fund grants for them, as well as the opportunity to train at the Heldenberg Training Center at the Spanish Riding School. That's one of our newest grants put together by the Dreisler family. So if you've ever had the dream to go visit the Spanish Riding School and participate in some of their theory sessions, check that one out. Judges, we've got grants available for judges and instructors for their continuing education. We have the Carol Lavelle Advanced Dressage Prize for those high-performance riders who are ready to get to that next level of international competition and training. We've got grants for breeders for education in order to just improve their current breeding program and create some exceptional U.S.-bred horses. Now, one of our biggest categories of grants is for those nonprofit organizations and group member organizations from USDF. We support a lot of educational events across the country through, like, the Violet Hopkins Fund. Those grants are for GMOs to put on educational events for their membership. So thousands of people every year are able to participate in dressage education through the help of the Violet Hopkins Fund and the Dancing Horse Fund for freestyle education. So I could go on and on, but it's all on our website.
Well, give us a sense, if you would, Jenny, of the kind of amounts that you're looking at. I'm sure they range enormously. They vary enormously. But give us a sense of the lower end and the higher end.
We do grants from just a few $100s, maybe for a young rider or a professional to go get go to a clinic or get some educational experience nearby, up to those $25,000 grants for the high performance teams to travel to Europe.
So how would anyone apply for any of these? Are they broken down specifically with the time frame and the frequency of them, or are they all annual grants?
Every grant is different, and every grant has a different application, a different timeline, maybe a little bit different process, things that we ask for on the application. So I would encourage anyone to visit our website, which is www.dressagefoundation.org, and under the Apply for a Grant section right on our homepage, it's broken down into young riders, adult amateurs, judges, instructors, and so on. So you can easily browse the category where you would fit and see what's available. And there's summaries available, and that also provides information on the application deadlines.
Now, presumably when you get those grant applications then, Jenny, much of your time is spent reviewing them. Who amongst the board does that?
Our board members are active in selection committees, but the majority of our selection committees are made up of other volunteers from across the country who are very knowledgeable in that category and in that area. And we have committee, say, usually 5 to 7 people on a committee that will review these. They have a lot of experience in the field, and a lot of them have been on our selection committees for quite some time. So they get the applications, they review them. If there's any questions that they have, they'll come back to me, and then I would contact the applicant if additional information is needed. So we have a pretty good process here, and some of them, I can get the committee to look at them and get an answer within a week if it's like the Violet Hopkins Fund, where it's kind of an open deadline. And then others, if it has a specific deadline, say of May 1st, usually we give the committee several weeks to review the information before we make the final announcement. And it all, the timeline kind of depends on how many applicants we receive.
I can imagine, Jenny, that maybe if you were a rider and thinking this would be a marvelous opportunity to get a leg up, if you will, in the sport. But what would you say to those riders who maybe are not familiar with applying for a grant and the application details of it? I mean, it can be quite extensive. Are there guidelines within each of them? And are they expected to do anything for the foundation in return for that grant?
Each of our grant applications and what the committee is looking for are a little bit different, and a lot of it depends on who maybe started the fund and what their vision was and what they would like to see in the perfect candidate. For instance, if we look at the Renee Isler Dressage Support Fund, that is open to young riders or professionals. And there are some specific criteria that you have to meet in order to be eligible to apply, basically to show us that you are very involved in continuing your education. You know, that committee wants to see that you are reading dressage theory books, that you're attending educational events, that you're spending time shadowing your veterinarian or your farrier to gain additional knowledge about horsemanship and your horsemanship skills. And that's what we're going to see, the questions we're going to ask on that application. And also for Renee's fund, she is interested in knowing how you could give back in the future in order to help the next rider. We want to just kind of make it a happy little cycle where when you're at a point where you need help, then we're able to give that to you. And then in the future, when you're able to help someone else, that is a great opportunity at that time to do that. So everyone is different, so there is information that details most of this out on our website. And if people have questions, if a rider who's never filled out a grant application or even a volunteer for their GMO who's applying for a grant and just has never done it before and is a little bit nervous, just contact our office. We're very happy to help. Jane and I try our best to answer all of your questions and be as helpful as we can, because we know that people out there aren't professional grant writers, and so we can help walk you through that process.
That's very reassuring. And I wonder, with any of these grants, is there a requirement for these applicants or the successful applicants to increase media exposure for the grant and for the foundation in the process of utilizing the grant?
With all of our grants, if you receive a grant from the foundation, you will be asked after you have used the funds to provide us with a written account of your experience. We want to know what you learned, and we want to be able to share that with other people in the dressage community. So that way, the money that, if it was to an individual, if an adult amateur got a grant from us, and that way they can share what they learned so other people can learn as well, and the money isn't just kind of going towards that one horse and rider team, but so many other people can benefit as well by reading about their experience and learning from that report.
Now, would this be a unique opportunity for a successful applicant, or are any of the grants, are they available for reapplication? Maybe in a few years' time you try again, would they be turned away because they were a previous recipient?
That is dependent on the grant itself. Some of them are open for those to reapply. There are some that specifically state that we want to help as many as possible within the instructor community, so you're eligible to receive this one time. Most of that, like I said, will be kind of on the website, and if there's any questions, though, don't hesitate to ask. There are instances that if you have received, say, for instance, the Carol Lavelle Advanced Dressage Prize, there you are eligible to apply again in the future.
And as you said, all that information is on the website at dressagefoundation.org. Just click
Correct.
On the apply for a grant, and you can see all the options that Jenny has shared with us here. Jenny, is there anything else that you would like to share on the show?
Well, like I said at the beginning, we are only here because of our donors, and we have people that support us with $10 or up to, you know, $10,000, and they are all so important. We are so thankful for everyone who has it in their heart to give a little bit back to the dressage community through the Dressage Foundation. We're here to help advance and grow the sport, which is good for everyone across the country that's interested in dressage, whether as a young rider, an amateur, or a professional. So if you're interested in helping join our cause, we would really appreciate that. It can be as simple as just sharing our information with your friends or the other riders in your area. We have flyers that can be distributed. We've got our Facebook page where you can become a fan and then share our posts with people that might be interested in grants or some of our other programs, such as the Century Club. And if you're interested in making a tax-deductible donation, a simple way to do that is through our new Sustaining Partner Monthly Giving Program. Set it up to where you can give as little as $10 a month, and it just comes out of your account automatically every month, and we send you a receipt at the end of the year with a big thank you, and those amounts just add up to do so much good to support all of our funds here at the foundation.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned it. I was going to ask you about the Century Club before I let you go, Jenny, because that is a fabulous little club that you have going there. Tell us about it.
The Century Club is one of my favorite things that we do here. I'm just so honored to be able to work with Century Club members. If you haven't heard of that before, Century Club riders and their horses' ages equal 100 or more years. So we have riders who are 80 competing on horses who are 20. Our oldest rider, I think, to date was 94 years old. So our oldest horse was 34. It's a really incredible club that really has seen growth, so much growth, these past several years. And we're up to, I believe, 197 members from across the country. In order to join, there's no membership dues. The horse and rider just need to fill out an application that can be found on our website, and they go to a show, and they ride whatever level test that they're comfortable riding, and they get a score from a judge, and that's it. They send us the documentation that we request, and they are a Century Club member, and we're so proud of them. They really are inspiring people to keep riding in their senior years, or even to start riding in their senior years for the first time. I hear on a really regular basis from people who say, I only have 10 more years until I can become a Century Club member, and I'm so excited. It's my goal, and I'm going to keep going as long as I can. So it's really fun to be a part of that.
Yes, it's amazing and so inspirational to actually watch what they're doing. And as you say, that's the great thing about the sport, is that they can go and continue to participate into their senior years. And I'm sure they're very proud members of the Century
Yes.
Club out there around the country.
There are. We are so proud of them, too.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program this week, Jenny, and telling us about the work of the foundation. And thank you and the staff and the board for everything you do in partnership with the USDF.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Be sure to check out the March issue of Connection magazine, in which Jenny is featured in a behind-the-scenes article. And now for part one of a two-part series of training tips from Kathy Simard, in which Kathy offers some advice for the start of the showing season.
There are some things that we need to think about before the beginning of the show season. And I think now is a good time to discuss it. So some of the scenarios I'm going to describe are from my own experiences, observations, and conversations that I've had on the show grounds. And I'm sure people listening to this will have their own situations they can think of. So I'd like to start with the riders. The biggest thing that I saw happening at horse shows was a lack of planning ahead. You need to know what is expected of you at the horse show, besides what you're going to ride, but also things as far as barn chores, setting up stalls, support roles, and it varies from trainer to trainer. People that have come to dressage from the hunter-jumper world might be expecting more of a full-service type caretaking situation at the show, where other people are more used to doing everything for themselves. So that needs to be discussed before the show. Also, if you're sharing a tack stall with other riders, you really need to pack accordingly. Whether there's three of you or six of you, everybody needs to combine their spot or maybe get together and discuss if they'd like to get a second tack stall to accommodate everything. Another thing is to learn the correct test. We have new tests this year. Make sure your trainer is up to date on that too. I actually have experienced a trainer yelling back at a judge that their student was not off course because they were doing the correct test. It happened to be the old test. So know what you put on your entry form that you signed up for, and it's always good if you have a reader to check with them and make sure they're going to read you the correct test. Also, riders, you need to know if your trainer will be available to warm you up for your test. Sometimes trainers are running frantically between horses and at a multiple ring show, multiple rings. So you also need to understand that your trainer may be coming from another ring and need a moment to compose themselves. I actually witnessed this year a trainer who was hurrying to a ring to coach a ride. It was a very hot day. They arrived at the warm-up arena, put their helmet in the fence post. They were still red in the face and sweating from their ride as they took their jacket off. But right away started to coach their rider. And as they were coaching, she kind of said under her breath, and I was in earshot, "Oh my gosh, I really need some water or I'm going to fall over." So she began to walk over to a water jug that was near the warm-up arena, and her client saw her walking, and she wasn't walking away. She was walking along the fence of the warm-up, but yelled at her, "Hey, we're not done here." Which I was kind of surprised at. And the rider, or the coach, kind of had a fumble with, "I know, but I need water." So I know the situation's stressful, but give your trainer, especially if they've made the effort to run to coach you, the time to take a drink of water. And they're not abandoning you. They're just trying to take care of themselves. Also, speaking of coaching in the warm-up, this is not the time for a lesson. If you don't have it now in the warm-up of the horse show, you are probably not going to learn it in the warm-up, which brings me to the trainers on that subject. This is not the time to teach. No one will be impressed while you expound on the merits of the training scale. Your rider should be ready to go and just need more of a coaching role from you, not a lesson role. So things like little reminders of keep your thumbs up, keep your leg long, sit deep in your seat. The biggest one is breathe. Everybody needs to breathe. if you are in a warm-up that sits close to a judge's stand of one of the show rings, when they hear a lesson being taught behind them, it kind of drives them a little nuts. More than one judge has told me that. And what can be even more troublesome to the judges is when that show ring is coming back from a break or they're running ahead and the judge and their scribe are sitting there listening to the fabulous lesson going on. And then your rider comes in and the test falls flat. It's a little disappointing for everybody. So try to keep the role at the show ring more of a coaching one and staying positive with your riders and preparing them for the test that way. Another thing that happens in the warm-up ring, now we all like to use radios. A lot of times, though, we're discovering that our headsets are on the same channel. And personally, when this happens, I think whoever was on the radio channel first has the right of way, as most likely they'll be the first off, too. They've probably been warming up their rider for a while, and their rider is probably going to head to the arena before the next rider does that is on the same channel. So if you can, change the channel if you can. I know some headsets are more difficult than the others. Or go back to the old-fashioned way of yelling or mentioning to your student as they go by little tips. You don't need to be rude about it. I actually, this didn't happen this year, but it happened a couple seasons ago. I was coaching a junior rider when an Olympian who came in to coach a pro suddenly came on over our headsets, and we were a little surprised, and the young girl I was teaching was kind of shaken up, like somebody else was talking to me, and I was trying to tell it was okay, it's somebody else that came on the headset. But you have to remember that when this happens, the other parties there sharing that headset channel can hear what you're saying. And the people that we ended up being on the same channel with acted like we were tapping into matters of national security. And so I thought, especially with a junior rider on the headset, that that reaction was a bit over the top. So, you know, use your radios, change the channel if you can, or talk to each other and find out, oh, you're going in the ring in a couple minutes, great. I'll wait till you go in and then we'll turn on our headset.
And our thanks again to Kathy for this week's training tip. You'll be able to hear part two of this series on next week's episode. You can find more tips and educational information on the website. Just go to usdf.org and click on eTrack. And whilst you're online, be sure to visit the Dressage Foundation website at dressagefoundation.org to find all of the information regarding grants available to individuals and GMOs. If you're new to the podcast and prefer to listen to it on the go, you can download it from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone or tablet podcast app. Until next week, thank you for listening, and remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.